Joanne Basar, who was a graduate student in the Department of Popular Culture, who actually did a lot of the legwork in compiling a lot of the facts and figures. And then I, of course, was waiting to create a program, which I since have been able to come up with. I have a program which have indexes most of the information related to the old record label. But the old record label, as I said, really begins before its inception in middle 1967. We have to go back and talk about Lou Adler, a very private and individualistic person. I'll get into the privacy a little bit later with a bit of news that adds to the colorfulness of his career. But Lou Adler, again, the enigmaticness of Lou is demonstrated by my trying to find out the birth date of him. I called BMI, where he's a member of BMI. They called all the information up on the screen, and I said, can you tell me when he was born? Oh, that's blank. And I says, well, where does he live? We can't give you any information. Oh, but by the way, I can tell you where they sent his royalty check to. So so I have that information, which I may or may not involve myself with. But what I'd like to stress is that Lou Adler, though a high school dropout from Los Angeles in the mid-1950s, he was, from what I can read in the articles, the inference in most of the articles, he seems to have been born in 1937, a high school dropout, and also served a hitch in the Navy. Got himself involved in the music business in Los Angeles in the mid to late 1950s. In about 1958 or 59, he teamed up and chummed around with our good friend Herb Alpert. And the two of them joined forces and created a couple small recordings. They joined forces on one composing effort, which became quite an important hit for Sam Cooke. And of course, in addition, Sam Cooke was also a close friend then of Lou Adler. And so what I'd like to do first is play this 1960 hit by Sam Cooke, which was recorded for the Keen record label, and it was called Wonderful World. Hopefully we're get our famous tape hiss. And this, of course, has just been revived recently. Button works again when I engage it. Actually, Lou, who was a musical genius, could not read or write music, but he was an entrepreneur, and he had the vision to be able to involve himself in the careers of artists, both production and also with the control of their musical talents. And sometimes that worked to his disadvantage at times, which will be another point I will share with you near the end. But he was involved with a lot of small record labels. He liked to be he was very individualistic, and he didn't like the corporate structure, so he involved himself with some small record labels. One was the Doré record label out on the West Coast, which was involved with the early productions of Jan and Dean, and then later with the association with the Beach Boys. In 1963, he formed his own record company, which came out with one album and a handful of singles. Every single except one was actually created from only demos that he had kept stored from artists that had sent him their material. And of course, these demos included things that were never doctored up, and so many of the songs did sound a little bit amateurish, but at the same time, some of them became, as we say, they became bullets on the charts. And one of the biggest hits that came out on the Dimension record label, which was the most popular recording on the Dimension label in 1963, and later in the mid-70s in England, enjoyed a revival of popularity, was Little Eva, who was the babysitter for Carole King, who was half of the famous Carole King, Jerry Goffin writing team, and her very big hit from 1963 on the Dimension label of The Locomotion. And undoubtedly, Carole King is one of the chorus in the background. Of course, by that time, Goffin and King, part of the Brill Building gang of song composers in New York, was taken under the wing of Lou Adler. Moving to the West Coast, she did a lot of performances and recordings, demos, of course, included for the Dimension label. And one of her biggest hits, which I want to play because we're going to listen to Carole King a couple times throughout my presentation to see how to show how she develops professionally. And so this was one of her mild hits that was recorded for Dimension label. Again, remember, this was a demo released as a commercial recording. It might as well rain until September. Again, listen to her piano work more than anything. Compare that. Listen to that. Remember that. Keep that in mind as we progress through through the recordings that I'll be playing. Another very prominent artist that Lou Adler took under his wing in late 62 and early 63 was a young gentleman who was performing live in a lot of the go-go dance venues and bars. But he was performing rock and roll, but performing in a suit, meaning that he was trying himself to attain a crossover artistic endeavor and attract audiences both from the students and plus also the over 18 to up to 30 crowd. His name was Johnny Rivers, and Johnny Rivers was taken under Lou Adler's wing and was one of the first members of what he became the Dunhill Production Incorporation. And the first hits of Johnny Rivers, which are the most electrifying, which Lou Adler produced, and the one that I want to play now is just a short version, short selection of Chuck Berry's Memphis. That was recorded, that album was Johnny Rivers' first album. It was recorded live at the Whiskey A Go Go LP. Soon afterwards, the hip movement was starting. The hippies were starting to infiltrate the long hairs, the flowing coats. The drug culture was starting to infiltrate into the California scene. Of course, where else in the beginning? And Lou Adler was taking all of this in, and he was making friends and acquaintances in the music business. And they, of course, were seeking him out because of his now becoming probably one of the most visible record producers on the West Coast. And a number of the artists that actually sought him out, or he in turn sought them out, one of was Barry McGuire, who originally came from the old New Christy Minstrels, but now, of course, was moving into the hip movement. Barry McGuire introduced him to John Phillips, who at that time was doing a little bit of songwriting. John, of course, later formed the group the Mamas and Papas, which became probably one of the first major artists to record for the Dunhill label, which evolved out of Lou Adler's original Dunhill Productions. And this is where Lou, who already was starting to become a rich gentleman, made another $3 million selling his productions to ABC Records. So the money was starting to pile in, but we'll hear more of that. So what I want to do first is play for you the first big hit by the Mamas and Papas as produced by Lou Adler. This is California Dreamin'. Now we move into the old record label. In the beginning, when I first decided to work on this label, I said, well, I want to capture a record label that we probably have every pressing in our collection. Even though small, I thought I want to have a control over this record label when I studied it. Well, I found out we did have just everything that Ode recorded. And that was really quite fortunate because I was able to then discover what records never even existed because I created the numerical sort. And as I went through them, I said, well, I'm going to tape them all so I can listen to them. And in the beginning, I said, what did I get myself into? It really sounds kind of boring. The music really isn't going to be what I enjoy, but I still will stick it out. Well, as I listened to it more and more and got into it and listened to more of the singles and the albums, I want to share with you what I feel became an electrifying experience, personally, that the music itself is quite energetic, it's quite innovative, and it really captures the 1960s, the feel of the music of what was happening in the 1960s, from the druggy psychedelic era up through the softer jazz and more or less laid-back musical performances. And as I investigated the history of the label, which began in mid-1967, it was originally distributed, owned by Lou, but through a distribution pact with CBS Records. And this started in mid-1967 up until late 1969. And during that period of time, there were quite a number of major recordings that were produced by Lou Adler. He created 11 albums on the CBS distributed label, including the first album by Scott McKenzie, which included the song Voice of Scott McKenzie, San Francisco, Wear Some Flowers in Your Hair. It charted in 1967. It was one of the biggest selling albums for Ode Records. Then three albums by the California-based Spirit, one album by a nobody group, The Comfortable Chair. I hope that reflects what's happening here with your comfortable chairs. And our famous friend from the Mod Squad, Peggy Lipton. I didn't bring in a musical example here. I thought I was going to, and I says, no, we really can't get into that. Well, no. And then a group called Africa, which was a black sort of soul psychedelic group, which created an album called Music from Lil Brown rather than Music from Big Pink, if you remember one of the first album, first albums by the band, and the graphics were duplicated picture for picture, typeface for typeface from the first band album. And then probably one of the rarest collectible albums, the group called The City, which was led by Carole King, and then a group called The Brothers and Sisters of Los Angeles, which was an album of Dylan gospel music. So that's what I want to do, is present to you some of the musical styles that were created by the CBS-distributed Ode record label. The funny thing is that in the numerical sequence, the matrix numbers matched the release numbers. 102 was 102-1 and 102-2, but there never was a 101. I couldn't figure out why. And then I realized record number 128 had the matrix numbers 101 and 102. I called up CBS. They said, well, we never issued 101. Isn't that just like a record company? So what I want to play for you is the recording of Stony End, the hit for Laura Nero, but recorded by the Blossoms, featuring one of the early efforts of Mary Clayton. This was recorded, this is one of the last issues of Ode Records, distributed by CBS, but supposedly the first recording, because the matrix number was 101. So here we have Stony End performed by the Blossoms with Mary Clayton. Again, that's Carole King on piano. As I mentioned earlier, the Scott McKenzie, San Francisco, Be Sure to Wear Some Flowers in Your Hair, became somewhat the unofficial anthem of the hip movement in San Francisco. And if you listen to it, you listen to the whole song, you just sort of get the feel of the casualness, the laid-back feeling that was created, you know, in this era, and then how it was reflected through the arrangement of the song. I want to bring that to you right now, but first I wanted to, I have the information here that, McKenzie, yes, that the song itself was on the charts in May of 1967, and it was on the charts for 12 weeks and reached the highest position of 4. This I got the information, of course, from our famous Joel Whitburn books. But I wanted to relate to you in a bit the popularity of the recordings that were issued on the old record label, but I want to give you this feel for Scott McKenzie. Ironically, Scott McKenzie and Peggy Lipton were the only two artists who recorded under their own name for the CBS distribution deal that went over to the A&M distribution deal in 1970. Another major group that performed and had three chart-writing albums in the late 1968 and early 1969 was the California-based group Spirit. Now, Spirit was a very unique group because they were very derivative of earlier rock and roll and blues styles, but they themselves didn't influence as many other groups as they probably created their own milieu. And the one record that I was not on the charts that I thought I wanted to share with you so you could get a feeling of what Spirit was sounding like was from a recording that they made in 1968 called Uncle Jack. Again, we have more of the psychedelia feeling in this recording. In fact, none of their songs actually hit the Hot 100 Billboard charts, but all three of their albums. So here we are now being introduced to the album concept, of course, begun, you know, by the Beatles, but an album concept which was actually the type of merchandising that probably was now the attitude of most of the record stores and also the record producers and artists, that the albums will now be the money maker rather than the single recording. The other single, which is considered to be the most collectible and rarest of all recordings produced by the Ode record label in the late 60s, was the rock group called The City, which the album itself was in and out of print very quickly, so quickly that most people didn't even realize that it came out. It included, of course, Carole King, Daniel Cooch Korchmer, who was of such a musical talent that that's why Carole King wanted to include him on her recording, plus her new love, Charles Larkey. So between the three of them, they created the recordings done by The City. The album itself is so rare, it became bootleg. The bootlegs themselves are very rare. We have a copy of the bootleg, which is a black and white photograph of the LP with a cutout hole in the photograph. So I want to perform again. This was again with Carole King, lead singer, on I Wasn't Born to Follow by The City. With the popularity of Bob Dylan looming greatly on the horizon, as more than just a horizon, and with being with Columbia Records, Ode Records thought that they would come out with an album of arrangements for gospel choir, singing all the popular songs of Bob Dylan. And they came out with an album in 1968, which included the one song, The Times They Are A-Changin', and the group itself had the lead singer again, was Mary Clayton. And so this is sung by the Brothers and Sisters, later known also as the Brothers and Sisters of Los Angeles. But this is very powerful. I mean, if you're into Bob Dylan and are into his arrangements, this arrangement will carry you even further. Sad to say, I know that I won't have a chance to play everything that I wanted to, but we'll carry it on until the end. But at this point in time is when the late 1960s, late 1969, is when things weren't going so well with Lou Adler. He decided to change distribution, and he then went over to A&M Records, and this is where he became the multi-millionaire that he now is. And what happened is that he started producing recordings for Carole King. Carole King really made the whole record company. From 1971 to about 1974, Carole King had four top pop records in the charts, seven on the easy listening charts, and six albums on the charts. And her album, Tapestry, the album Tapestry that she had, won the Best Pop Female Vocal Award for 1971, the Grammy Awards. The song of the year from that album, You've Got a Friend. The Tapestry album was the album of the year, and the record of the year, It's Too Late, also won a Grammy Award. And this actually, the name Tapestry, was the word coined to the home, the fortress that Lou Adler built. It was called the House That Tapestry Built. And he had this as a fortress, and he thought that he was impregnable and that no one would ever be able to approach him and actually harm him. But if you remember or not, in September of 1976, some beach bums got into his home, kidnapped him, and held him for ransom for $25,000. The ransom was paid. Lou kept silent. He was embarrassed. They only held him for $25,000. But other artists that recorded on the label, and again, I want to try to get as much as I can into here, of course, the other moneymaker, the other very popular and considered to be, quote, the first rock and roll comedians, Cheech and Chong. They made 5 albums for the old record label. Of course, Tommy Chong was out of Vancouver, guitarist, worked in topless joints, met up with Richard Cheech Marin, was discovered at the Troubadour by Lou Adler, and all of their albums are still in print, now being sold through Warner Brothers, and out of those, all except one are, all 5 of those are available, and 4 of them went gold. And of the Carole King albums, the 3 of them that are still in print are her children's album, Really Rosie, her Tapestry album, and a Greatest Hits album. That was probably the last album that came out on the old record label. Other artists to record for the label were Tom Scott and the LA Express, a jazz man, David T. Walker, session man, Gene McDaniels trying to make a comeback, Carl Gimarizzi and Dennis Tufano, 2 members of the original Buckinghams, who, if you remember, had the major hit Kind of a Drag. And then they had shows and films, the Baby Maker soundtrack, Celebration, because Lou actually sponsored the Big Sur Folk Festival in 1970, the Rocky Horror Show, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and the remake of Tommy with the London Symphony and Chamber Choir. So what I want to do is try to get some tunes in here right at the end, because this is probably my favorite of all recordings made by old records, the comeback of Barry McGuire with a guy called The Doctor, who really was called Eric Horde, who played unbelievable slide guitar, bottleneck guitar, and Barry McGuire on harp playing Train. And this was from 1970. Dig this. Old records. Okay, well, we'll just stop.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
So I'll just. Richard told me 2 things. 1, I have to stop, and 2, who used to distribute this label. So I have a choice of 2 things. I must stop, but I want to quick read you the end of what I wanted to play for you. I Feel the Earth Move by Carole King, one of her major hits in 1971. Then I wanted to give you Sister Mary Elephant. Now, these are suggestions for you to listen to. Sister Mary Elephant by Cheech and Chong, A Classroom Situation. Replacing Sister Mary Rose, Sister Rosetta Stone, Tufano and Gimarizzi, Warming Up to the Band, Don Everly's, one of Don Everly's comeback recordings. And then I was going to dedicate this last song to everyone in the audience, Tim Curry from the Rocky Horror Show doing Sweet Transvestite. Thank you very much.